Welcome to the Corner of Film podcast. I'm Niall from Corner of Film, which is a film website where I write about film. I'm joined today by my co-host and best friend, Jack. Hiya, Jack.
Hello, Niall. Do people know your surname?
Yeah, I think they know mine. It's on my Twitter, which I plug every week. So
Then hello, Niall Gray.
Hello, Jack. No one knows your surname. Do you want me to keep you an enigma?
Yeah, I quite like being a mystery.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Hmm.
Yeah. How are you?
Well, I was going to say, you're going to have to excuse my horrible, horrible voice. I have got really bad cold/flu thing. It's not the C word. I've done tests. We're all good.
Can we just clarify, when you say the C word?
What C word do you mean?
Well, there's one that's much worse than the...
Oh, well. Genuinely don't know. Let's start that one again.
Jack, it's spooky season.
It is best season of the year.
It is. How are you? Are you feeling spooky other than the obvious illness?
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling it. We're still early in the month. I've not had time to get into too many horror films, but I love October. I love Halloween films, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm going to say it. I think this is the best time of year for films. There's a real, like, season to it. I feel like with Christmas and the holiday season, obviously there's a massive market for Christmas films. But it's not about that. Like, there's so many more connotations to Christmas time. And Halloween, I feel like there's not so much to it, really. That you can't just go, well, I'm going to spend October just watching horror movies for every day. So, yeah, it's spooky season. We love it. We've got a little bit of a spooky episode.
Ooh. But the main one being next week will be the spookier one.
Yes, we will have a real sort of Halloween episode next week, which will be so frightening that we might even kill some of our listeners.
Wow.
Fright. Not, that wasn't a threat.
It sounded a bit like a threat.
Yeah.
We'll get you.
So before we get started, Jack, I actually, for the first time in a very long time, properly dove into the analytics for the website and for the podcast.
Ooh, and interesting.
You might be interested to learn that we actually have more listeners and readers in America than we do in the UK, where we're based.
Yeah, that does surprise me. Although, to be honest, I know very little about what the numbers do on this podcast, because I turn up, I mumble along for an hour and a half, and then I go. I don't really know what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, you're more like the you're sort of like the diva who just comes in and smashes it out of the park.
Diva. Like, I like to think I'm what's the bald guy who was in the house band for
Letterman,
yeah.
Yeah,
what's his
I
name?
Cannot remember his name.
No, I like him and his glasses. I want to be him.
Yeah, I can see that, actually. I can sort
Thank
of.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we do big numbers in America. And I think I've said before, but we also get quite a lot of listeners and readers in India. I've noticed we've got quite a contingent in Germany, which...
Oh, yeah.
Just baffling. We're like an international brand here.
Isn't it weird how that works? Like, I would never think, maybe America, but like India and Germany, that's so random.
Yeah, with countries like, you know, America, Australia, you sort of, it's not surprising that there's an overlap because it's the same language, you know. But
yeah,
for German listeners, there's a fair few French listeners and readers, and it's just, yeah, there's a language barrier to it that makes it a little odd.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, we get like listeners in Hong Kong. There's like five or six people. Yeah, there's like five or six people in Hong Kong listening.
That's awesome.
Quite regularly. So, yeah, very interesting.
Shout to you guys.
Yeah, exactly. Hello to everyone around the world that's enjoying the very professional podcast that we put out here.
Yeah, that is funny. Like, I just think little old me sitting in the spare room surrounded by rubbish in the middle of nowhere, and people are listening to it in God knows where.
Your phone's ringing, by the way.
Damn, can you hear that?
Just about.
That's hilarious. Because my mobile rang and it's on silent. And I was like, they'll call back or they'll call Liz. No, they've rung the home phone.
It's in keeping with spooky season because the call could be coming from inside the house.
Why would you say that and freak me out?
You just said Liz was there.
Yeah, but what if she's planning on killing me?
I'm stuck in the bathroom.
I'm letting her out. Before we move on, Niall.
Yeah.
We saw each other for the first time in, what, 2 years?
Yeah, nearly. It's been lockdown time. So, yeah, about 18 months, 19 months.
We finally met again, and it was lovely.
We did. And do you know what? I've not got them here next to me. I didn't make a note of them. But you brought me a stack of birthday presents, which featured some very interesting films.
Oh, yeah. They were... I just went and I looked at the covers and I thought, right, what is going to be the most ridiculous film that Niall possibly hasn't seen? And I think, 5 for 5, I got ones that you haven't seen.
No, 6. It was 6 of them, Jack.
6? God, 6. I'm so generous.
I know. And so this might seem a little odd to people who don't know us, you know, personally, but Jack has a bit of a history of doing this to me. for years now, he's been buying me really obscure, really bad films, and I've been watching them. So,
oh, you like?
Yeah, exactly. And this is exactly the sort of thing that I love. I love watching films that no one has ever heard of. I love talking about how weird and wonderful they are. And it's just a beautiful thing. So thank you for that.
Friendship.
And yeah, I'll be watching them. I think I'm going to try and do like one a week or at least one between every podcast from now on so that we can...
Sweet. You know, there's a couple of good potential Halloween-y ones in there. There's a really, really campy-looking horror film, which I might have to borrow when you're finished with it.
Definitely. Or I'll do a screening and we'll watch it together.
Oh, that'd be so good.
I think what I might do is I might watch that one and break it down in the next episode.
Yeah.
For a real scare.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll just do that.
So, Jack, what have you been watching since we last recorded?
Well, the big thing is I finally got back into a cinema and I saw a film finally. It's not what I thought it would be, my first film back, like properly. I thought it would be like Bond or something else, but Bond wasn't out just yet when I went. But there was genuinely nothing that I wanted to see. There was the new Marvel film, but we'll get around to watching it. But but anyway, because it was approaching and it is approaching Halloween, Odeon were showing like random films, and I went and saw Beetlejuice, which was really cool because I love Beetlejuice, and to get to see a film like that came out before our time really, and you don't really get the chance to see on the big screen, was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's it's an interesting one. It's like you say, it's not one that you'd necessarily sort of think of going to see at a cinema. But
No, definitely not.
Very exciting. And
yeah, and then the next day they were showing the Poltergeist? I don't know. It was a real like classic horror. And I was like, oh, damn, I really wish I could go and see that. But
yeah, when did this happen that, you know, mainstream cinemas don't really show older films anymore? Like, it's a big thing in like pop culture, like it's sitcoms and stuff. It's usually an American thing, and they go to the cinema and they watch like The Planet of the Apes or
yeah
that doesn't really happen here unless you're talking about like indie cinemas. You don't really get that experience of like, oh, they're showing an old film at, you know, my local screen. Like,
well, yeah, no, especially where we are, we're a bit in the sticks. But I mean, if you know you're in London, then you're spoilt for choice for cinemas alone, really. And a lot of them throughout different holidays or whatever, they have different themed and they'll show older films. But yeah, it's not something we get too much of where we are.
No, but I think there's a real market for it. Like, I think people
definitely
would happily go. I mean, not for like crazy prices, but for a reasonable, you know, admission price, I think people would be happy to go and watch like. Just like 90s classics
it's different, isn't it? Like I said, like for certain age groups, like seeing films that you would never get to see or that you would dream of seeing at the cinema, that you get the chance to watch them.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of cinema, isn't it? Yeah is that, have you watched anything else? Just the Beetlejuice? Or
what else have I watched? I watched Ace Ventura Pet Detective, because
nice.
We were in the mood for some Jim Carrey, and you know, Ace Ventura, it's not one I always go to because I used to watch it a lot, but there's a reason I watch it a lot, because it's great.
It's so, I'm conflicted by Ace Ventura. Are you? Well, yes, because there's a sort of nostalgia to it. Like, I vaguely remember it from my childhood, but the humor has not aged well. Like,
no, it's yeah,
problematic in places.
It's yeah, it's definitely a certain type and time of era of comedy, that's for sure. Oh, and apart from that, I read an article. It wasn't one of yours, surprisingly. but I saw it was just one of those ones. Well, I'm sure you know, where you have to like make like a really catchy like headline to get people interested. It was. I didn't even read the whole article. Didn't need to. They kind of got it in one sentence. But
yeah, the first sentence. That's all you ever really need to read.
Yeah,
first
exactly.
And last sentence. That's it.
Are you expecting me to read for 2 minutes? You're having a laugh, aren't you? Right. So there's now enough Treehouse of Horror episodes, as in The Simpsons, to watch one every day throughout the month of October.
Nice.
So I've been doing that, and that's quite nice because, you know, they're 20 minutes and you can just stick that on in the morning or before bed, and it's Halloween-y.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's early in the month, so I guess you're still on sort of early ones.
Yeah, season two they started.
I was going to say, they didn't start in the first series, but I can remember if it was two or three. Now, the early ones, the first couple were a bit, like, not that funny. They were just sort of traditional horror, right?
Yeah, they played a lot on old horror literature and...
Yeah, like Edgar Allan Poe and... Excellent, but very different to what a lot of people will think, I think, when they hear Treehouse of Horror.
Yes, yeah.
And then there's what, like maybe 10 years of decent sort of funny ones. And then the quality started slipping a little.
Yeah.
So, I mean, by Halloween, you'll probably be...
I'll be sick of them.
Yeah. Yeah. But still, it's a nice gimmick.
So,
yeah, definitely. Do you, are you ready to hear my list?
So let me know. Let's get into it. What have you been watching?
Okay. I'm back to my old habits, really. It's not the biggest list I've ever given, but it's quite long. So I'll blitz through. The MCU watch through continues. So I've watched Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2. I've watched Avengers Age of Ultron and I've watched Ant-Man.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'll be reviewing all of those, putting them up on the site. I won't really delve into those, but phase 2's finished. I'm going to take a break from reviewing Marvel again before I start phase 3. I'm enjoying it, actually. I am enjoying watching them through.
That's good.
You know, like, I love Ant-Man. It's not without its problems, which I'll put in the review, but you know, they're fun. And when you get to sort of this point in the MCU, it's picking up speed and you're starting to get a little bit more like, okay, well, this is, you know, every film sets up the next. And I'm not a massive fan of that, but equally there is an excitement that comes with it. So,
yeah,
you know. I've also watched, I know I spoke, I think it was last episode, but I mentioned that my partner has not seen The Matrix. And
oh, yeah.
So we watched the first Matrix.
Cool.
We will be watching 2 and 3, the other Matrices.
Oh.
I don't know, I just like saying that.
That's a great word. Is that a real word?
Yeah. Well, Matrix, like, as a noun, that's technically the plural, but I don't know that you would use it for the films, but I just like saying it, so, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, we watched the first one. Holds up really well.
I need to rewatch them.
Yeah, I mean, so I really like 2 and 3. I know a lot of people don't, but I really enjoy them. So I'm looking forward to watching those, but we only watched the first, and considering that was over 20 years ago, it just looks great still. It's still very cool. Just groundbreaking action. Like, you can't not enjoy it. If you're a fan of action, if you're a fan of sci-fi, there's nothing not to like. So
yeah, that's crazy. That's over 20 years old now.
I know. I also, Jack, I watched Netflix's, I hadn't seen it, but I had to write a piece about it.
Oh, yeah.
Netflix's Extraction, the Chris Hemsworth action film.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was decent. It was better than I thought it would be.
That's always good.
But it wasn't anything really to write home about.
Pretty standard.
I have watched two newer films that I think you'll be excited to hear about.
Yeah.
I watched The Green Knight, finally.
Oh, awesome. I still haven't... I texted you when I was like, oh, it's on Prime, but I haven't watched it yet. Did you love it?
I watched it the night you sent me that.
Yeah.
I will be honest.
Oh, no.
I did not love it.
Really?
So, yeah, I've looked at the reviews. I've read several reviews, actually. I've written a couple of pieces about it. I didn't hate it. My partner, I'm gonna out her here. She did not like it, and she literally left halfway through.
Really?
The issue was, I think there's an expectation now, which rightly or wrongly, it's there, so you can't really deny it. But there's an expectation that with a story about knights and, you know, King Arthur's knights in particular, there's going to be action, and there was no action. Like,
was there not?
None. Which, I mean, the trailer sort of, it didn't explicitly imply action, but it didn't. The trailer sort of set an expectation for a film that was a lot less arty than it was. It was very like independent movie almost.
See, I got those vibes, but they did kind of flirt with a little bit of swords, you know, like sword play and whatever, but
practically no action at all. I mean, in fact,
interesting.
Off the top of my head, I don't think there is any. That said, visually, absolutely beautiful. Like, it is a really stunning film, but the pace is quite slow because basically it's a really faithful adaptation, generally speaking, of the traditional tale of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. So I think if you were familiar with that story, which I personally wasn't really.
No, me neither.
You would go in and be like, oh, well, that's good. It's, you know, a retelling of the story. But if you're not, and you're expecting something a little bit more magical, maybe. I mean, there was magic in it, but it was sort of a period film more than it was a sort of mythical film. Really odd, just not what I was expecting at all. And I did find it a little bit boring, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
In places. Still, Dev Patel was amazing. And
yeah, he's great.
You know, generally, as a film, objectively speaking, very well made. It looked great. It was well acted. It was, you know, visually just done brilliantly.
Mm.
It also felt very authentic in terms of looking like it was, you know, looking medieval.
Yeah.
So I would still recommend it, I think, but with the disclaimer of, in my head, I'd hyped this film up to be something incredible, and it didn't quite meet that. So you go in with your expectations a bit lower and...
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check it out and I'll see what we reckon.
And, well, yeah. And on the exact flip of that, pretty much, I also watched Free Guy, which is now on Disney Plus.
You know what? I tried to watch that last night, but where I'm so ill, I was halfway through. I was like, I can't do this. Like, I need to go to bed. I kind of liked the little bit that I saw. Not massively. The issue I have with that those kind of films is... where they're so like CG heavy and like,
yeah,
CG is not the word, but like when films try to do tech of the current time, it just looks super cheesy and dated. Like,
yeah, well, they try and make it look futuristic and that sort of takes away from the experience anyway. I find it very overstimulating.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah, so I wrote a piece a little while back, a couple of weeks ago for Screen Rant about how Gerard Butler's Gamer from 2009 sort of shares a lot of similarities. It was a news thing. Gerard Butler said, they're not that similar. Or, you know, I don't watch his movies or something about that.
Oh, really?
Which sort of made the film relevant again, which, I mean, Gamer was not a particularly loved film. I enjoyed it, but people didn't really like it.
I haven't seen it.
No, it's sort of obscure. It's a decent film, actually. But there's sort of similar themes of basically in that film, people have these implants that allows them to be controlled as game characters, and sort of wealthy people play video games where they control real life human beings in death matches and life sims and stuff. And Free Guy is about an NPC in a video game who basically gains sentience. So there's a similarity there kind of thematically, I guess. But I felt in terms of its tone and its general approach to sort of presentation, I felt it was a lot more like Ready Player One, which...
See, I haven't watched that either because I want to read the book first.
So I loved Ready Player One. I really enjoyed it. It's very, you know, big screen blockbuster. And I've actually got a point to make in my pet peeves that's very much against both films. But
okay,
as films go, they've got, you know, a decent, if predictable story. Like Free Guy, I could sort of see exactly where it was going, but It was nice. It was fun. It was a little sort of 2 hour journey. Is it Joe Keery? I think his name is from Stranger Things.
Stranger Things, yeah. Because yeah,
he's quite good in it. Ryan Reynolds is quite funny in it.
Did you like Ryan Reynolds? I'm so undecided. Like, I like him as a person, but I find him really hit or miss.
No, exactly. I couldn't quite tell if I liked him in the film, but he was okay in it. In terms of acting, he was quite good. I found him a little bit like annoying. I did like Channing Tatum had a cameo, which I thought was quite fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was okay. Again, I'd recommend it, but it wasn't anything special.
Just a fun little film.
Yeah, and I mean, now it's on Disney Plus. If you've got a subscription, which I think most people have, really.
Almost everyone.
You can just watch it on there. It's not, you know, it hasn't cost me anything to watch it. And that's kind of my philosophy. I don't think I would have paid. If I'd paid, you know, however much for a ticket to go and see it, I think I would have been a bit like, okay, it's not really for me. But in terms of that, just I can watch it with my Disney Plus subscription, you know, great. I'm quite happy with that. Entertain me. The last thing I watched was actually last night. Obviously, this doesn't include TV, but we just wouldn't have time. So
no.
The last thing I watched in the honor of spooky season, I watched Halloween.
Oh yeah, because you hadn't seen them, had you?
No, I've seen the first one, but literally just the first original one. And I did see the Rob Zombie remake a few years back, which was okay. But I watched the original last night again.
Isn't it great?
It is great. You can't. I was going to review it, and I was thinking that's a Hall of Fame film. I don't see how you could put it in anything else. But I don't really know what to say about it other than it's just excellent. You know, musically.
Yeah, John Carpenter.
Just everything about it is just, it's great. There's a reason it's a classic. And yeah, it's really got me in the mood for Halloween. So yeah.
Good stuff. You'll have to watch the new one in time. Oh, I'll save a new one. The 2018 one in time for the new one, which comes out, I think, next week, maybe?
Well, I did actually look last night, and on Netflix, you've got the original Halloween, which I actually own on DVD anyway, but Netflix has the original. It has 2, 3, 4, and 5. All on Netflix. So
interesting.
If you fancy that, then.
But they're not canon, so don't get confused.
Well, no, but it's Michael Myers, you know, slashing people up. So
yeah, what's not to like?
Yeah, spooky, spooky. moving on, Jack. We actually have what I'm gonna sort of label a juicy segment switch up.
Sounds juicy.
It's so juicy. Segment 2, which used to be Let the Games Begin, is actually now we're trying it a different way and thought this might be more fun. And I've run it past Jack. He agrees with me. So if you're listening and you don't like it, you fight us. Segment 2 is now going to be What's Going On?
What's going on?
Yes, it is this week or this fortnight's movie news. And there's actually not that much, all things considered. I've sort of tried to arrange it in something resembling chronological order, but it doesn't really work that way. So no. I figured we could talk a little bit first about, it was almost 2 weeks ago now, a week and a half ago, but Netflix had had a little thing. It was called Tudum, which...
Clever.
Yes, clever. Tudum, of course, is the noise, apparently, that Netflix makes when you turn it on. There was some little funny, not funny, but supposedly funny, scripted, like, riffing between various Netflix stars about...
Oh,
it was like, oh, but the boom boom is missing, and they're all looking for the missing boom, and then someone goes, no, it's a Tudum, and it was like, oh, God, just get into it, please. I'm going to be honest here, and I'm going to say I like Netflix as a platform. I think it's, you know, a lot of fun. There's a lot on there. I don't dislike the stuff they put out. However, I had to watch this because I'd picked up some pieces for Screen Rant that I was writing about, some stuff they were covering and some stuff that was being sort of revealed. And so I thought, well, I better sit and watch this. It was being streamed to Netflix's official YouTube channel, to their Facebook page and their Twitter, I think. So naturally, go onto YouTube, start streaming it. I think the busiest time, like the time where it was being most watched, it had 40,000 viewers. This was a global event.
That's not great.
Not at all.
To be fair, though, it wasn't very well publicised, because until I spoke to you, I had no idea what it was.
I'd seen one advert about it, and I thought the name was so confusing that I didn't even bother reading about it. I was like, I don't care, it wasn't clear. But do you know what? They'd put a lot into it. Like, they'd really tried to make it fun. They'd got, because it was a global event, they had various stars of various TV shows and films that they've got, you know, like the Money Heist cast did a segment.
Yeah.
They, you know, all in their like respective languages. And it was obviously subtitled for whichever nation you're in.
Wherever you are. But, in the world.
I liked the general idea of it, but it just wasn't particularly gripping. Like, unless you've watched everything, and you can't, because certain things are only available in certain territories, it didn't really like grab me. There was some stuff that I thought, oh, that's quite fun. But the stuff I was interested in was not particularly like, it was like 5 minutes long. So the main things that I kind of took away from it were basically, well, there was some TV stuff, which again, we've not really got time, but you know, there's some good stuff there. If you're not up on it, have a look. You've probably heard about some of the reveals anyway, but the reveals film wise that I was excited about were The Murder Mystery, the Adam Sandler sequel.
Yeah.
I did write a couple of pieces for Screen Rant about why it's maybe not a great career move for the Sandman, but generally and personally, I'm very excited for it. I enjoyed Murder Mystery, love the Sandman.
Yeah, so did I.
I personally just love every film he makes, no matter how stupid they are.
Always a good time.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Murder Mystery 2, I don't see how I won't enjoy it. So, the other was Extraction 2. Given that I just watched Extraction to write about it, I then wrote a couple of bits about Extraction 2. Quite excited that there's going to be a sequel, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, why not?
The thing is, and this is the thing with Netflix, and this is probably why this event wasn't massively, there wasn't really a buzz. The thing with Netflix is, other than the massive releases like Stranger Things and stuff like that, that are, you know, pop culture phenomenons, no one really cares, because as soon as that film goes up, it will come up on your home screen. If you want to watch it, you'll watch it then. People don't really watch the trailers for like Netflix films now. I don't
know.
They're not really publicized anyway before the fact, and people are used to that. So well, I just think
they just bank on, like, you see Chris Hemsworth and you're like, oh, okay, it'll be to a certain level of like,
yeah,
you don't need to watch the trailer.
So, I mean, I know we talked about this in person off the podcast, which seems just really alien.
Yeah, that is weird.
Extraction did like 99 million streams in its first month on Netflix. So, yeah, that's huge. And people will watch a sequel. It was a decent film, good action. Like, if you like that sort of film, it was good. So yeah, they did that, and I'm pretty sure you could probably go back and watch it all now. It was just over a week ago at the time of recording. It would be almost 2 weeks ago at the time this goes out. But you know, if you want to go back and watch it, it wasn't a bad time. It just was a bit sad in places.
Yeah, that is sad that they put a lot of effort into it to make it like it. They thought it was going to be good, and only 40,000 people. I mean, you say 40,000, you think, oh, it's quite a lot. But then you look at how many people
use Netflix. Yeah.
And then you're like, ooh, that's not
They've
great.
Got, I think the official numbers are over 200 million subscribers now. So
that is madness.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, if it's still up, I think it is on YouTube probably, you can go back and watch it, I guess. And yeah, the thing is, I was watching it live, so I couldn't skip through to find the bits I wanted to see.
No,
so I kind of
true.
Was stuck watching, like, there was a half an hour about Bridgerton, which I did just interested in.
No.
But yeah, so was that. We've also had recently a couple of big releases. I know we sort of touched on it briefly a minute ago, but No Time to Die came out, the new James Bond, Daniel Craig's last one.
Finally.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken its time.
Yeah, that is, well, everyone knows the story of that one just being pushed back and pushed back and pushed back.
Yeah, and do you know what? I will say that their approach to this release, as much as it's been frustrating for people waiting for it, it's paid off because they've done massive numbers, like box office wise.
Yeah, I was just looking at it, like I've got it up here, and it's when was this written? Oh, this article was written today, and apparently it made 21 million between Friday and Sunday, and it's beaten Skyfall. Yeah, just smashed it. I mean, to make 21 million pounds within 2 days is pretty crazy. So I can't imagine it's going to flop by any stretch of the word.
No, exactly. And, you know, so this is sort of the common theme between the three big releases over the last few days. So we're recording this on Monday. This will probably go out at the end of this week. So, you know, think like last weekend. But the three films that are sort of new are No Time to Die, Venom 2, Venom Let There Be Carnage, and The Many Saints of Newark, the Sopranos prequel. And No Time to Die, like you just say, has done big numbers. Venom 2 has done, it's earned $90 million over the weekend.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So completely shattered records, like sort of pandemic records and stuff. And it's, yeah, that's done a crazy amount. And I've actually written a piece today about this. I don't know if it's up at the time of recording. It'll definitely be up by the time this goes out. But it's about how Many Saints of Newark did not do well.
Which is a shame.
It is, but there's sort of a lot of reasons why. And that's kind of what I've written about in my piece. It basically is, so $50 million production budget. Over its opening weekend, it earned $5 million.
Oh.
And it's also not got good reviews. Like,
was it not?
No, not impressive. So I'll tell you what, I won't go into my points as to why, but if you're interested in that, go and maybe check out Screen Rant, where yours truly might have written a piece specifically titled Why the Many Saints of Newark Flopped at the Box Office.
Great idea.
Yeah, it's a short read, 2 minute read, but yeah. So the kind of, there's two sort of big item actual movie things. The first is that we've covered this a couple of times, but Disney and Scarlett Johansson have actually settled their lawsuit.
Oh, finally. I'm fed up of talking about this bloody Disney.
Yeah, so we might as well just blast through this because it's done now. A bit anticlimactic. Yeah, I mean, so this was kind of, I talked to a friend about this, another friend, Jack. I do actually have one,
how
weirdly.
How dare you have other friends?
Someone messaged me about it and we were having a chat and I just said, but this is so anticlimactic. Like,
yeah,
this
was
really shaping
was.
Up. Well, no, it wasn't shaping up to be a big thing, actually. It was made out to be a big thing. You know, it looked like it was going to be this huge, bitter, like, legal battle. And basically, they've settled. The specific numbers and figures haven't been explicitly disclosed, but it's been kind of suggested in reports that Disney have paid Scarlett Johansson around $40 million.
Yeah.
And the other sort of news that kind of comes out of it in the statements is that they're looking forward to continuing to work together.
That made me laugh when I saw that. It's clearly like, I mean, Scarlett Johansson doesn't really need any more money from Disney. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, she could quite happily go,
no,
I don't need to do any more. However, Disney need her to a degree.
Yeah, and the thing is, so she's currently producing and starring in a Tower of Terror film, which
awesome.
I mean, I'm assuming that's sort of based on the ride from the from the parks. I don't really know much about it, but that is sort of in the work, so she
that's
can't
cool.
not work on that. But the comment to me sort of maybe indicated a possibility that she might return to the MCU.
How though? That is the question. But a question for another time, I think.
It is, but I'm sure if you're interested in that, there will be, before long, probably things all over the internet, theories and whatnot. But I thought that it left it weirdly open for it. So that's kind of my hot take is just,
yeah,
you know, keep your eyes on that. Because I reckon even if it's just for sort of cameos.
Yeah, she'll definitely have little cameos.
We shall see. So the last bit of news actually is, it's not necessarily a big piece of news, but it's interesting and it quite possibly has some sort of far-reaching implications. The rights of Friday the 13th have been officially awarded to Victor Miller, the original screenwriter. Did you read about that?
I did. So from what I could make out. So who had the rights up until now? The director slash producer?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just sort of the studio.
Studio.
Yeah, so I've written a piece about this, and to be honest, I'm not an authority on copyright law and the kind of intricacies of that, but I obviously did my due diligence and my research on it, and as far as I understand, the sort of general thing is the copyright's held by the studio or, you know, some person within the studio or involved with the film, and after a certain amount of time, the copyright sort of reverts to the creator.
Okay.
The argument here was that Victor Miller wrote the screenplay for Friday the 13th, the original film.
Yeah.
And that he should have the rights. But Sean S. Cunningham, I think his name is, the original film's producer, director, he basically said that Miller was hired to write the screenplay, and Miller said the screenplay was bought. Now that basically, it's very uninteresting kind of legal distinction, really. But generally what it means is if he was hired to write the screenplay, then he's considered an employee of the studio, in which case the rights belong to the studio because he was employed when he wrote it. But yeah. So it's called a work for hire, like it would make the screenplay a work for hire if that's the case.
Like freelance.
Yeah, sort of, but not really. It sort of makes him more of an official employee.
Okay.
As opposed to if he's written the screenplay and then they've paid him to use the screenplay, or, you know, like they've outsourced writing the screenplay, or it makes him not an employee, which basically means that the rights can revert to him personally because he wasn't a part of their company when it was written.
Oh, yeah.
So this actually, like, I think it was 3 years ago, they actually sort of decided in court that he wasn't work for hire, that the rights should belong to him. Sean Cunningham appealed and said, no, he was, and that the issue was with the Screenwriters Guild and it wasn't to do with the studio, and that it was a whole thing. And they've basically now officially said, nope, the rights go to Victor Miller. That's that. I mean, the real speculation is kind of, what does that mean in a wider sense for film and for sort of copyright and stuff? I mean, do you have any real thoughts on it? It's kind of speculation, but...
Yeah, I think it's not so much a grey area, but a lot of those things, it's overgeneralizing, but maybe the way job descriptions and what they entail... I don't know. I don't know who's protected by what contracts and whatnot, how it works in Hollywood, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know. See, I don't know who to root for in this case because, yeah, I feel like both parties, you know, have equal ownership to it because it's one thing to write the story, but then if a director has a different vision and brings it to life, then, I don't know.
It's something that I'm both very interested in and very not interested in.
Yeah, it's boring. But then also, like you said, in the bigger picture, are we going to get more films?
I think ultimately, like you say, what will happen really is they'll just, going forward, rewrite and sort of rethink how they write contracts and stuff. And it will be a lot more black and white. But I'd imagine, really, that's probably already being done. But I think because there needs to be a certain amount of time that elapses before these sort of copyright claims can be made, that there will be more coming out of the woodwork in that, you know, this person says, but I wrote this script and I want the rights to...
Yeah, you watch. You know, it's going to... There's loads is going to come out, isn't it? Now, one thing has been brought into the limelight. A lot more cases are going to come out. I mean, it's already, you know, you hear stuff like that all the time, especially with in music, like songwriting credits and whatnot. But I can imagine it's going to bring a few more cases to light.
Yeah, well, so this is the thing. Jason is the most iconic character, and he didn't really exist in that first film. Not in the same sense, but his origin story did. So he didn't appear in his iconic state, but as a character, he existed. His story was there. And the fact that Victor Miller now owns the rights to that story, but not the character as such, makes a bit of a weird grey area for the franchise going forward. But generally speaking, it won't be quite necessarily quite as sort of complicated with other franchises. And it means millions and millions of dollars to these people, you know, owning the rights to this franchise or that franchise or this story, that story. And to be honest, from a consumer's point of view, from an audience point of view, I really don't care who has the rights.
No.
Ultimately, what's going to happen is the studio will have to pay for the rights to make the film. And we might see some studios going, oh, well, do you know what? If I've got to pay $50 million to get the rights to make a horror film about this character now, I'm just going to make a horror film about a new character.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother.
No, we don't know. That might happen. But odds are they'll just go, oh, do you know what? Let's just pay to get the rights to the character and then we'll move forward and nothing will change. So,
good point.
Exactly. Let's move on. So from the very, very spooky world of copyright law, let's move on to our segment three, Jack, which is
Let the Games Begin.
Yes, it is Let the Games Begin. Today, Jack, I've brought along something very silly.
Very ominous as well. I wasn't really sure what to make of the note you sent me, but here we are.
No, so I've done my best to keep this a surprise for Jack.
Done well.
Because it's very silly. And I wanted to do something a bit spooky. And I've just sort of mentioned to Jack really before we started that I wanted to do a sort of horror icons against each other, who would win in a fight kind of thing. But when I started writing down the names of various iconic horror characters, it became very clear very quickly that there would be sort of two or three that would be the kind of winners and the rest would not survive. So what I decided to do instead was, now I've heard this sort of done by a few different people in a few different ways, and basically we all know the Hunger Games. Now I'm not going to go into my outrage that it ripped off Battle Royale, which is one of my favorite films, but basically what some very clever person has done on the internet is you can enter names into a bracket and it will simulate an entire Hunger Games for
you. That's awesome.
So what I've done is I have entered 22 horror icons, and you and me, Jack.
Oh, we're in there.
We're in there.
Oh, hell yeah.
Us and 22 horror icons, we've engaged in a battle royale.
Oh, great. This is going to give me nightmares.
So, no, it's really not.
Okay, good.
So I simulated this Hunger Games, and the simulator makes it an actual Hunger Games as sort of that exists in the realm of how the film presents the Hunger Games. Yeah. And as funny as it was, I read through most of it. I tried to skim it because I didn't want to know exactly how it turned out. And it became very clear very quickly that it wasn't particularly spooky because it's the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And I thought about it and I thought I'd really want to not know what happened because I thought it would make it funnier when we read through it. But I couldn't leave it. So what I've had to do is I've rewritten the narrative, not rewritten, I've reworded the narrative. So the general premise is borrowed from this Hunger Games simulator, and the actual story that's set out is simulated by that simulator. But I have changed sort of obvious Hunger Games references, like, you know, picking berries and climbing trees.
Yeah.
And I've changed the setting and I've changed some sort of general aspects of it to make it a bit more horror-esque.
I like it.
So I have named this Deathmatch at the Overlook Hotel.
What a great name.
So I've decided to set it in the iconic Overlook Hotel from The Shining, which is actually based obviously on a book, which it itself is based on a real life hotel, which has a fascinating history. You know, go and look that up if you're interested
you
in
can
it.
Stay there as well.
You can. And I think I actually did a mini about this. I think I talked a little bit about it on one of my mini episodes. Yeah. I don't remember, but yeah. So I'm going to read through the, in the Hunger Games, they call them tributes. I have renamed them combatants.
Ooh.
So I'm going to read through the 24 combatants in our death match. I will also read the films that they're from. Some of them are obvious, but I will read them anyway, yeah, just in case people aren't familiar. So we have got Michael Myers from Halloween. We've got Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th, Freddy Krueger from Nightmare on Elm Street, Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Ghostface from Scream. We've got the Xenomorph from Alien. We've got Predator from Predator, Pinhead from Hellraiser, Candyman from Candyman, Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs, Norman Bates from Psycho, Pennywise from It, Pazuzu from The Exorcist, Chucky from Child's Play, Jigsaw from the Saw franchise, The Mummy, The Wolfman, Dracula, The Invisible Man, Jack Torrance from The Shining, Patrick Bateman from American Psycho, Annie Wilkes from Misery, and Jack and Niall from the Corner of Film podcast.
Well, I mean, it goes without saying that I'm going to win.
Okay, so I'm just going to clarify. The sort of order of people's deaths and whatnot is intact. So I haven't fiddled this. Okay. I'm going to apologize now as well, because it will be a lot of me reading. But just hear the funny narrative and enjoy, because it's spooky and silly. Okay. Day one. The combatants take their marks, forming a circle around the grand lobby. At the lobby's center stands a casket filled with weapons and supplies. The combatants eye one another, anxiously gauging strengths, weaknesses, and potential allies. As the tributes stand on their marks, the buzzer sounds. Right, so the rest, that was just sort of stage directions that I wrote to set the scene.
Okay.
The rest is basically like a sort of itinerary of this happens, this happens, this happens, this happens. So I'm going to just read them item by item.
Okay.
Pazuzu runs away from the casket. Patrick Bateman takes a knife from the casket and throws it into Candyman's chest. The Invisible Man, Norman Bates, Jack, and Annie Wilkes run away from the casket. Hannibal Lecter grabs a shield from the casket. Jason Voorhees scares the Wolfman away from the casket. Pennywise and Jack Torrance fight for a bag.
Fuck him. Imagine that.
Jack Torrance gives up and retreats. Predator and the Xenomorph run away from the casket. Dracula convinces Pinhead not to kill him, only to kill him instead.
Ooh.
Chucky, Leatherface, the Mummy, Freddy Krueger, Jigsaw, and Ghostface all run away from the casket. Michael Myers snaps Niall's neck.
Oh, so you're all right.
I'm dead. I'm dead, like right at the start. Sorry. Sorry, me. I'm gone. The Xenomorph hunts for other combatants. Pennywise explores the Overlook. Annie Wilkes hits the haunted buffet.
Of course.
Yep. Chucky scares Hannibal Lecter off. Pazuzu, Ghostface, Dracula, and Jigsaw form an uneasy alliance and hunt for other combatants. Norman Bates, the Wolfman, Predator, Jason Voorhees, and Leatherface form their own alliance and hunt for other combatants. Jack Torrance receives fresh food from an unknown sponsor. Freddy Krueger receives fresh food from an unknown sponsor. The Invisible Man receives medical supplies from an unknown sponsor. Patrick Bateman defeats Michael Myers in a fight, but spares his life. Jack steals from the Mummy while he isn't looking.
Damn right.
So that is the end of day one.
A lot going on.
So at the end, yeah. So obviously, as people die, there is less going
on. Okay, good.
So it sort of gets, the days get progressively shorter. As day one ends, three bells sound over the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Day one's fallen combatants are Candyman, Pinhead, and myself. Night one. The Wolfman, Leatherface, Freddy Krueger, Norman Bates, and Hannibal Lecter sleep in shifts. Pennywise, Jack, and Chucky discuss the games and what might happen in the morning.
Can I just say, that is my absolute nightmare. I hate Chucky. Freaks me out.
You're sat in the Overlook Hotel with an evil clown, a living doll at night, and you're just talking about what might happen in the morning. Jigsaw, the Invisible Man, and Michael Myers sleep in shifts. The Xenomorph receives a hatchet from an unknown sponsor. Annie Wilkes is forced to drink from the toilet. Patrick Bateman tries to treat his infection. Now, I did look through. This was like in there, and I looked through, and there is nothing really that indicates where he got the infection. So I'm assuming it's pre-existing.
Yeah, just an ongoing medical condition.
Yeah, but he's trying to treat it. So, yeah. Predator taints Jack Torrance's food with his alien blood, killing him.
Wow. So,
sorry. Yeah. Dracula, Pazuzu, and the Mummy cheerfully sing songs to sunrises. So that's the end of night one. We're into day two. Jason Voorhees and Ghostface talk about the combatants still alive. Pazuzu tries to sleep through the entire day. Ghostface barricades himself in one of the rooms. Chucky begins smashing furniture for firewood.
Of course he does.
Jigsaw accidentally detonates a landmine while trying to arm it.
That's kind of ironic.
I was going to say, isn't that a funny death for a character famed for setting traps?
What an idiot. Like...
Michael Myers hears noises in the kitchen, but decides not to investigate. Pennywise and Predator split up to search for resources. Freddy Krueger risks a trip to the buffet, where he eats his body weight in dry toast. Leatherface and Dracula fight the Wolfman and the Invisible Man. Leatherface and Dracula survive. Patrick Bateman questions his sanity, which
that is spot on.
Annie Wilkes stalks Hannibal Lecter through the halls. The Xenomorph chases Jason Voorhees. Jack steals some tofu from the kitchen.
Oh, again.
No, I added the tofu.
Oh, I was going to say.
This comes up a couple of times. So.
Okay, cool.
The mummy strangles Norman Bates with a loose bandage, killing him. So that's the end of day two.
Okay.
Five bells sound through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Day two's fallen combatants are Jack Torrance, Jigsaw, the Wolfman, the Invisible Man, and Norman Bates.
Oh, I'm sad about the Invisible Man. I like him.
Yeah, well, I mean, hold on. How did the... Oh, Leatherface and Dracula killed him and the Wolfman at the same time. So, yeah, I can... Yeah. Okay, we're on to night two. Dracula and Ghostface tell stories about themselves to each other. Sweet.
They're cute.
Leatherface destroys the Xenomorph supplies while she's asleep, but leaves her alive. Turns out he has a crush on her.
Aww.
I mean, I added the crush in just for a bit of excitement. But yeah, I thought those two make a nice couple. I've just sort of assumed that the Xenomorph is a female Xenomorph.
I was going to say, interesting though.
Well, yeah, I figured you get the queens, don't you?
Exactly. Cool by me.
Freddy Krueger stabs Annie Wilkes in the back with a trident, pinning her to the wall. I mean, he's got knife hands. I don't know why he's using a trident. Lazy. There we go. Jason Voorhees begs for Patrick Bateman to kill him. He refuses, keeping Jason Voorhees alive. Pennywise questions his sanity. Jack and Pazuzu tell stories about themselves to each other.
What?
They form a close bond.
That would absolutely not happen.
I've added in that you form a close bond with Pazuzu from The Exorcist because, weirdly, for quite some portion of this, you and Pazuzu do a lot together.
I don't like that.
Okay. Predator decides to have a bath to relax.
Nice.
Yeah. Chucky and Hannibal Lecter fight Michael Myers and the Mummy. Michael Myers and the Mummy survive.
Of course.
Ooh. Day three. Ghostface sprains his ankle while running away from Patrick Bateman. Predator, Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, and Jack raid Pazuzu's camp while he's hunting. You've raided Pazuzu's camp. You were friends last
time. I've stabbed in the back.
I also just realised I should have changed camp to room, really, because it's a hotel, but... I
could have set up camp in a room.
Oh, yeah. Pennywise, Leatherface, and Dracula hunt for other combatants. The Xenomorph attacks Freddy Krueger, but he manages to escape. The Mummy gets caught on a loose nail and almost unravels. He's able to compose himself before disaster strikes. As day three ends, three bells sound through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Day three's fallen combatants are Annie Wilkes, Chucky, and Hannibal Lecter. Rest in peace.
R.I.P.
Night three. Jason Voorhees receives clean water from an unknown sponsor.
I like the word sponsor, by the way. We could make a sponsor up.
Yeah, who do you think the sponsor is?
Papa John.
Yes, I love Papa John. He is hilarious.
And the water isn't water, it's special garlic sauce.
Even better. Oh. I would drink that.
Oh, yeah. Liquid gold.
I just want to know what's in it.
No, you don't.
What is in it? Oof. Pennywise begs for Jack to kill him. Jack refuses, keeping Pennywise alive.
Well.
So can you just picture the demon clown from It is begging you to kill him and you say, nah.
Yeah, what would my motive be? I've got to be playing the long game.
That's a power move. That's just pure.
Yeah.
Predator and Leatherface talk about the remaining combatants and plan the next move. Freddy Krueger thinks about all the children he could be terrorizing. Dracula, Michael Myers, and the Mummy sleep in shifts. The Xenomorph cries herself to sleep.
Aw.
Ghostface also cries himself to sleep.
What are they so sad about?
I don't know. Pazuzu stays awake all night. Patrick Bateman goes to sleep. Ghostface feels homesick.
Sad. That's why they're upset.
Okay, we're on to day four. The Mummy hits the buffet, but there's nothing left.
Damn.
Freddy Krueger shoots a poisonous blow dart into Jason Voorhees' neck, slowly killing him.
I rate that.
Michael Myers begs for Jack to kill him.
Oh, man, I've got so much power.
No, Jack refuses, keeping Michael Myers alive. Why? What? I don't know why this keeps coming up, but you are real. You're a real sick man.
I'm looking forward to seeing why.
Predator plans a holiday in Central America. Pennywise receives face paint and balloons from an unknown sponsor. which we now know as Papa John.
Yeah. Well, that makes the whole story actually a bit creepier, knowing that Papa John's pulling all the strings.
He's about to reappear here. Okay. Dracula receives clean water from an unknown sponsor. It's holy water. He pours it down the toilet. That's actually really funny, because it was something about the water was poisoned or something. And that was a little joke. But now it's Papa John. It could be garlic sauce, and it doesn't need to be holy water.
Because that is holy water. So,
exactly. So the joke's just become another joke. Yeah. You preemptively made that joke funnier. So,
you're welcome.
Well done. Leatherface overhears Pazuzu and Patrick Bateman talking in the distance. They don't know what they're talking about, but, you know. The Xenomorph goes hunting. As day four ends, one bell sounds through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Day four's fallen combatant is Jason Voorhees.
Damn, I thought Jason was going to make it.
I know, but this is turning out to be crazy. Yeah. All right, night four. The Mummy, Pennywise, Patrick Bateman, and Ghostface tell each other ghost stories to lighten the mood. Freddy Krueger cries himself to sleep.
So much crying.
Michael Myers tends to Predator's wounds. That's nice.
It's nice. Thoughtful.
Leatherface soils his sheets and has to sleep without warmth.
It looks like he's soiled everything he owns anyway.
So originally it was something about like Leatherface's camp is like raided and he sleeps without warmth or something. But I thought soiling his sheets fits with the character. So
it definitely does.
Right, we're on to day five. Jack receives medical supplies from an unknown sponsor, Papa John.
Papa J.
Dracula catches Xenomorph off guard and kills her.
Damn.
Oh, yeah, I know. Pazuzu attempts to start a fire in the kitchen, but is unsuccessful.
What an idiot.
That's your best friend.
Yeah, but I decided I don't like Pazuzu.
Oh, well, okay. Predator begs for Michael Myers to kill him. Michael Myers refuses, keeping Predator alive. So, can I just say, Michael Myers snapped my neck without thinking in the like first minute of this game, and he's now sparing Predator, who is much more of a threat.
Well, maybe he's gone, oh my God, what have I done? I need to sort my life out, and I need to give people a second chance.
I guess, but I mean, why did he kill me? Like, I'm pretty unassuming. So,
well,
you know,
he obviously saw something in you that no one else did.
Yeah, well, Michael Myers is a great judge of character. So,
he really is.
You know. I have to keep resisting the urge to call him Mike Myers.
Mike Myers. It reminds me of that sketch, that little joke in Baby Driver when they robbed the bank and they've all got Mike Myers masks on, Austin Powers.
Yeah, that is
that
funny.
That was good. I like that.
Okay. Freddy Krueger shoots an arrow at Ghostface, knocking him through a nearby window. He falls to his death. Patrick Bateman reads a book to unwind.
What's he reading?
I don't know. I was about to ask the same question. What do you think he's reading?
Maybe like a really old copy of like the Beano, or on the other side, I think maybe like a self-help book.
Do you know, I like the idea that he's reading like the Beano. So for any American listeners, the Beano is like a really cheap children's comic book. Like think, I guess, kind of Archie Comics type.
Yeah.
Like that's a sort of equivalent.
Dennis the Menace. They know Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, but Dennis the Menace to them is a different character.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he's that weird little blonde kid.
Yeah, odd. America's weird.
Yeah, you freaks.
Yeah.
I'm joking, please. Listen.
Continue to listen, yeah. Wow. Dracula slips on a wet floor. He hits his head and dies.
Oh.
Dracula, like, iconic movie vampire, just slips on a wet floor and dies.
Who's at fault there? Did anyone put out like a wet floor sign? Because,
well, technically, that's Jack Torrance's job and he's already been killed.
Oh, well, so there you go. Should have kept him
that's
alive.
That's why. The Mummy, Leatherface, and Pazuzu hunt for other combatants. Pennywise goes hunting. As day five ends, three bells sound through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Day five's fallen combatants are the Xenomorph, Ghostface, and Dracula. We're on to night five. The Mummy lets Patrick Bateman into his shelter. Pazuzu, Predator, Freddy Krueger, and Michael Myers sleep in shifts. Leatherface defeats Pennywise in a fight, but spares his life.
Mm.
Jack suffers an infection. He uses his medical supplies to treat it, but he loses control of his bladder.
Oh, no.
guess which part of that I added in?
I wonder.
I was a little bit salty that you've survived this long and I died.
Well, it's only fair that I wet myself.
Really, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I think either of us in this situation would have made a whoopsie.
Oh, so, in the first 5 minutes.
Okay, the next part, I couldn't think of a way to reword this that made it less Hunger Games-y, okay. But it's quite funny, so I wanted to keep it in. So this is just the feast, as it is in the Hunger Games, but the feast. The casket is replenished with food, supplies, and weapons. Leatherface decides not to go to the feast. Pennywise severely slices Patrick Bateman with a sword. Freddy Krueger catches Predator off guard and kills him. Jack heads to the feast. There's nothing vegan in the casket, so he leaves empty-handed.
Oh, that is a damn shame. Could do us some more tofu.
They don't. The Overlook does not cater to you.
Well, that's an TripAdvisor. I'm logging on right now.
Well, to be fair, your unknown sponsor Papa John does do a nice selection of vegan pizzas.
Oh, some great vegan pizzas. I'll be having strong words.
Yeah, I mean Papa John will keep you safe
if I make it out alive.
Pazuzu and the Mummy decide not to go to the feast. Michael Myers bleeds out due to untreated injuries. Oh. Day 6. Pennywise hunts for other combatants. Pazuzu explores the Overlook Hotel. Freddy Krueger tries to sleep through the entire day. Probably trying to kill people through dreams.
Yeah, there's a method there.
Leatherface eats the remains of the fallen combatants. The Mummy raids the kitchen. Jack tries to raid the kitchen, but sees the Mummy and steers clear.
Yep.
As day 6 ends, 3 bells sound through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Day 6's fallen combatants are Patrick Bateman, Predator, and Michael Myers.
I'm glad Mike Myers is gone because...
Because he's an ogre.
He's an ogre. He's just really unnerving. However, I will say, out of all horror films, Leatherface scares the absolute hell out of me.
I do. I think it's the whole hidden face thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're quite physically imposing.
It's massive.
The characterization, but also the sort of, there's no emotion, they don't speak, that's the creepiest part of them. Yeah, so good riddance, Michael Myers. You killed me, now you're dead. Okay, night 6. Freddy Krueger tends to Pennywise's wounds. Leatherface and the Mummy huddle for warmth. Oh,
that's cute.
Pazuzu quietly hums, and Jack takes comfort in the sound.
Oh.
You and Pazuzu have a real thing going
on. Yeah, it's a love-hate.
Day 7. Pazuzu, Freddy Krueger, the Mummy, and Pennywise track down and kill Leatherface. Jack wets himself and hides in an empty room while his trousers dry.
Mate, can you behave?
Well, originally it was just like Jack hides in a cave or something, and I was like, I've already put that you lost control of your bladder,
only
so I might
wet myself once, it's dried out and started to smell, and I've done it again.
Yep.
Thanks for that.
To be fair, think of the amount of corpses in this hotel, and it's the Overlook. It probably already stank, so... You know, no one's noticing the urine smell.
I know.
It's fine. I also, weirdly, I've not actually kept track, but I don't think you've killed anyone.
That's because I'm a pacifist.
I think you might have... You've obviously been in a fight because you had an infection.
Yeah.
But I don't think you've killed a single person, but you've survived. You've lasted, like, quite far.
Lack of protein, that infection was, because I'm not getting enough meat.
I think there's only... There's 1, 2, 3. I think there's only 5 combatants left.
Ooh.
Yeah. 5 combatants left, I think. And you've not killed anyone, but you've survived that long. So, as day 7 ends, 1 bell sounds through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Day 7's fallen combatant is Leatherface. Night 7. The Mummy thinks about winning. Jack helps Pazuzu to treat an infection. That's sweet.
We really are. I'm helping him a lot.
Yeah, see, not only are you a pacifist, you're also actively helping the others. That's really...
I'm going to get betrayed. Nice. I can feel it.
Yeah. You and your wet trousers are just running around like Florence Nightingale in the Overlook Hotel. Freddy Krueger and Pennywise talk about the remaining combatants. Day 8. The Mummy attacks Pazuzu, but he manages to escape. Freddy Krueger receives medical supplies from an unknown sponsor. Pennywise feels unwell and spends the day resting.
I'm glad.
Jack gets lost wandering the Overlook Hotel's hallways. As day 8 ends, no bells are heard through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Night 8. The Mummy is awoken by nightmares. Freddy Krueger lets Pennywise into his shelter. Pazuzu tries to sing himself to sleep. Jack joins in. That's a nice night. Day 9. Pennywise and the Mummy work together for the day. Jack tends to Pazuzu's wounds again. Oh. Freddy Krueger makes a plan to kill Jack.
Oh boy, here we go.
As day 9 ends, no bells are heard through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Ooh. You've lasted well over a week now. This is crazy. Yeah. Night 9. Pazuzu cries himself to sleep. Jack tries to comfort him. Oh. The mummy begs for Pennywise to kill him. Pennywise refuses, keeping the mummy alive. Freddy Krueger stalks Jack, but he falls down the stairs and dies.
Yes.
So you've escaped death again.
I don't know what to say.
Day 10. Are you ready?
Yeah, go on.
Day 10. Pazuzu explores the arena with Jack. The mummy stalks Pennywise. As day 10 ends, one bell sounds through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Day 10's fallen combatant is Freddy Krueger. Night 10. Pazuzu tends to his wounds. Pennywise stabs the mummy while his back is turned. Ooh. Pazuzu smothers his best friend Jack while he sleeps.
What?
A single tear falls from his face.
Have I just died?
Pazuzu's just killed you. You've helped him. You've saved his life like three times.
I knew that was coming. I was just
smothered you.
I was nursing him.
Killed you in your sleep.
I was nursing him back to health, and that's how I get betrayed. And also, if I'm going out in a hotel full of murderers, I want a better death than that.
Yeah, but at least it's painless. Pazuzu's just done it as a kindness. Really.
I want to get torn to shreds.
And I say, he also cried. A single tear fell from his face when he did it.
Yeah, so, an empty tear.
Day 11. Pazuzu and Pennywise engage in a fist fight. Pazuzu beats Pennywise to death.
Damn it.
As Pazuzu stands over Pennywise's corpse, three bells sound through the Overlook Hotel's intercom. Day 11's fallen combatants are the mummy, Jack, and Pennywise.
God damn it.
Pazuzu wins the Halloween trophy. He's free to possess as many children as he wants, but at what cost?
The cost of his best friend. Like, what a betrayal.
That, I mean, what a journey. That is just like randomly generated, slightly tweaked by me to make it funnier. But
I mean, that is, yeah, what a great idea.
Yeah, can I just say the bits I've added in are like the bits where you wet yourself, the vegan jokes.
I had a feeling it might be something like that.
And a couple of things about like drinking out of the toilet and the predator taking a bath was taking
a holiday.
They were Hunger Games. Well, yeah, they were Hunger Games specific things. I thought, well, I've got to change them, so I might as well make them funny.
Exactly.
But yeah, that was it for today.
That was great.
Not really a game as such. I mean, a Hunger Game.
Ooh,
but
it was a journey.
It was a journey.
One that I thoroughly enjoyed, but I was a little saddened by, I can't lie.
Exactly. We will move on to our final segment, which is our pet peeves. Jack, did you bring a pet peeve this week?
Did I bring a pet peeve? Yeah, I did. I tried to keep it Halloween-y, horror-y. Although, looking back at it, I feel like we might have already talked about it. But if we have, I'll think of something else.
Okay.
In horror films, and yeah, mainly horror films, jump scares, which are just not warranted, just like lazy, you know?
I don't think we have talked about this. I think we might have maybe touched on it briefly. I talked about it with Harry when I did my episode with Harry, but I think we've sort of briefly talked about like in when we talked about our weekly watches and like horror films, but no, it's not been a pet peeve yet.
Well,
so go on, lay
well,
it on
just,
me. What?
You know, everyone knows it's, when you're watching a horror film, you want to be scared to an extent, and it's often a lot of the I would say almost all horror films have a jump scare. Am I wrong? Like,
not really. No, I get what you're saying though, because some jump scares are perfectly justified.
Oh yeah, there are some good ones,
like Halloween that I watched last night, for example. There's a couple where Michael Myers just sits up and he's in the background of the shot, and that's a jump scare. That's not, it's, he's not physically jumping out.
Yeah, but that's within character. It's good.
Yeah, it makes sense in terms of the narrative, but it's also, it's not done as like a gimmick. Yeah. it's an actual significant thing. But yeah, so like films like I guess as soon as you said it, the first one that came to mind was Insidious.
Yeah.
Or the Insidious franchise, which I actually enjoy as films, as horror films. I, you know, like them. But yeah, there's that. It's quite a common modern horror thing. Wouldn't you agree? Like that it, supernatural horror especially is big. You know, The Conjuring, Sinister, The Babadook, stuff like that. Where so much of it is about like, it builds the suspense and builds the suspense and it's all creepy and you know someone's going to come out and then it jumps out at you. Freaks you out.
That's,
and
the whole of Paranormal Activity is just jump scares.
Yes, I knew there was another franchise. It's to me, that's the cinematic equivalent of those really early YouTube videos with the car driving along the road and then the thing pops up.
Oh yeah, classic.
Just, Yeah, but who decided that that needed to be part of film? Like,
yeah. But it's good. It's good, though. Like, not even necessarily in, like, traditional horror, but, like, we always talk about A24. I feel like such a hipster. But, like, in Hereditary, there's some really good ones, which kind of... I'm not mad at. I'm like, oh God, like
no. What that? I think that's the difference, though, isn't it? When because when I think of Hereditary, I don't think, oh yeah, there were loads of
jumpers. No.
There were a couple that made me jump that were also quite scary, but not. It wasn't just overly used as a basically as a crutch for the film. Yeah, there are a lot of horror films and like even like really popular successful horror franchises that just rely entirely on jump scares.
Having said that, when you are watching a film or you're going to watch a film which you know is cheesy and which you know is going to be rubbish and of that caliber, it's kind of fun because you're like, it could be any 2 seconds, there's going to be constant in that. If you're watching films like that, fair enough.
I was just going to say as a counterpoint, I have just sort of trash talked it a little bit, but I really liked The Conjuring. Like
I've only seen
the first one. I've seen the first one, not the others yet, which I know have got quite good press. But the first one was actually a really good film, as horror goes, you know, supernatural horror. But yeah, there is a real reliance on jump scares, and it does get a little old.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, you've got to be able to do them properly, I guess. And the sign of a good jump scare is that it makes you jump and that it builds attention. Yeah. But it's starting to feel like a lazy trope.
Yeah, it is lazy.
Which actually leads quite nicely into mine, which is not Halloween related at all. But, you know, speaking of laziness, mine is... So, I know I said earlier on, I watched Free Guy.
Yeah, yeah.
My pet peeve for this week is Easter eggs, which we actually had a conversation about this last week in person.
Yeah.
But just this excessive thing about, like, Easter eggs and how they've become such an integral part of films now. And people get so animated about the Easter eggs in this film and the Easter eggs in that film. And basically the idea of what an Easter egg is has evolved from a very small visual nod or something that's not necessarily sort of overtly referenced, not necessarily important to the wider plot or the film itself. Just something like, for example, like if you're watching The Green Knight and in the background there's a tapestry that shows some obscure Arthurian legend, and like that's an Easter egg. But you've got films like Free Guy, like Ready Player One, like pretty much every Marvel film made in the last sort of 10 years, where Marvel's probably not fair, actually. I take that back, because Marvel is a cinematic universe, which is a whole other beast. But films like Ready Player One and like Free Guy, they essentially rely on their Easter eggs to be relevant.
Although I will say, Ready Player One, is the book not entirely based around... I've not read it, I've got it, but is that not the world that's set in?
Yeah, it is, but the thing is, Ready Player One is slightly different because it's like a pop culture narrative, which, again, like it's sort of warranted, but the way the film was done was there were so many of these references that didn't need to be there, that they're just shoehorned in so that basically it gives people like me who write about film on the internet, it gives us something to write about. You know, every Easter egg included in Ready Player One, every Easter egg, every character included in Space Jam.
Yeah, like, you have to have multiple watches.
Yeah, and do you know what? That doesn't make a film more watchable.
No.
It shouldn't. It does, because people will watch it 3 or 4 times, watch that bit 3 or 4 times to go over... This character's there. I can see that character. Can I spot something that no one else has seen? You know, I get that, but that's lazy filmmaking, because when you look at the films that are using that, they're not particularly outstanding films.
No.
So like Free Guy, for example, again, I feel like I'm dunking on this film. It wasn't a bad film, but basically it makes use. I don't want to spoil it for anyone who's not seen it, but it makes use of a few pop culture sort of weapons and stuff from other films, from video games. They're used as part of the narrative, they're used as part of a fight, and they are used in conjunction with how they work in their respective, you know, films, video games, whatever. Yeah. But for example, if you've never seen any Marvel films and you don't know what Captain America's shield does, that Easter egg is lost on you. That
wasted.
Whole point, the point, yeah, its inclusion is lost on you. most people, you know, the vast majority of moviegoers will know, at least roughly know, even if they've not seen it, they'll know what the shield is.
Yeah.
But there's also like the portal gun from Portal is used.
Oh, cool.
There's one of the guns from Half-Life is used. There's various things that are, they're just in there as like little, oh, but look, we're referencing this game, we're referencing this film. And it's like,
why? Yeah.
What's the point? That's just a shameless, like, cash grab sort of, it's not even a joke, but it's sort of intended as a bit of a like, yeah, but look.
The real world.
Yeah, I just think, oh God, just like, that's not meta humor. That's not like groundbreaking writing, or that's just, oh, I know we could use this thing from this film and let's just shoehorn it into the narrative. And it really annoys me.
I can tell.
Yeah, I just get really like wound up by stuff like that. Yeah. I just think it's pointless and it's lazy. It's lazy writing, because you could easily have written a film where, you know, that fight is given more significance by not including those things, where, you know, it has an actual narrative purpose. But it feels like it's just in there to A, put in a fight at the end of the film, and B, so that it can include these little references to completely unrelated franchises. Yeah. It just seems a bit, it just rings hollow. And that is deeply, deeply annoying.
Brand deals, got to get that money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that actually brings us to the end of this week's podcast. As always, please do follow Corner of Film on the social medias. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Corner of Film. You can also follow me at Lord of the Grey on Twitter if you're interested. I do share most of my Screen Rant stuff to there. Actually, I haven't been lately, but I will share some of it. And you can just find me, go to screenrant.com and have a look through, because I'm not the only one writing for them. They have a lot of writers who are very talented people. So do go and check that out. Yeah. Also, please do subscribe, like, rate, comment on the podcast on your platform of choice. It will help give us a boost. And we're climbing the numbers. So just, I guess, keep doing what you're doing. Tell your friends about us. Yeah, let's see if we can get to more countries, because we've got a few listeners, a few like readers in Eastern Europe, but I really feel like we could get a stranglehold on like the Russian market.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Let's make that happen. Yeah.
Okay, it's actually my turn for the outro quote today. I figured it's October, I kind of have to do a horror movie quote.
You do.
I will be honest, and I will say that having looked through, most horror movie dialogue is really cheesy.
Super cheesy.
So I've gone classic. I've gone for a quote from, it's actually from two separate films.
Ooh.
But it's from Dracula. So it was in the original, the 1931 original, yeah. Which, not to sound like a nerd, but I own it on a physical copy.
So do I. So, it's rather enjoyable, actually. Yeah.
It is actually a really good film. It was also reused in, was it 92, I think? The Bram Stoker's Dracula with Gary Oldman and, yeah, Keanu doing that really bad British accent.
That's the one.
But it's a quote from the man himself, or from the, you know, creature himself. Listen to them, the children of the night. What sweet music they make. Well, Jack, it's been, as always, it has been an absolute pleasure doing this with you.
You know what? It's been a pleasure to scrape my voice through for an hour or so. I just hope it's not disgusting to listen to. I have been throughout the podcast smashing the mute button when I've had to like cough up a lung. So
yeah. Oh, don't worry. I'll cut out the coughs and the splutters and the.
Oh, good. We'll save you from that. But
yeah. I mean, I will keep those audio files for my own sort
of
purposes.
You're a freak.
Well, as always, we've been Jack and Niall from the Corner of Film podcast, and you've been so juicy. Goodbye.
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 Bye.
Perfect.